Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about a man who flew with a lion in the cockpit. A real one. A live African lion cub strapped into a little parachute of his own, riding shotgun across the American West while the man at the controls wore a powder blue uniform he designed himself. Complete with a diamond-studded pair of wings and a waxed mustache you could hang your hat on. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar. Today we're talking about Roscoe Turner. Now, if you've never heard that name, don't feel bad. He's faded a little from the books. But in the 1930s, when air racing was the biggest spectator sport in this country, bigger than you'd believe, Roscoe Turner was the most famous pilot alive who wasn't named Lindbergh, and unlike a lot of the showmen of that age, the man could actually fly. He backed up every ounce of that swagger with a stick and rudder. Before we get rolling, let me tell you today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story, and Roscoe Turner, believe me, would have loved a good coin. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. So, let's set the scene. Roscoe Turner was born in Corinth, Mississippi, in 1895, farm boy. He didn't come from money, didn't come from flying, didn't come from anything that would have predicted what he became. He drove an ambulance in the First World War, got into the balloon and aviation service near the end of it, and came home to the same thing thousands of young men came home to, a country suddenly full of surplus airplanes and no particular use for the men who flew them. So he did what a lot of them did. He barnstormed. He flew a war surplus Curtis Jenny from town to town, taking farmers up for a few dollars a ride, looping over county fairs, landing in pastures. And here's the thing about Roscoe, most barnstormers were selling the airplane. Roscoe figured out something the others hadn't. He was selling Roscoe. Now here's where it gets interesting. He understood, way before most people did, that aviation in the 1920s was 90% show business. The public didn't care about carburetor icing or magneto drops. They cared about spectacle. They cared about a character. So Roscoe built one. He designed himself a uniform. This sky blue affair with gold buttons and a Sam Brown belt and riding breeches and tall polished boots. He grew that magnificent waxed mustache. He gave himself the rank of colonel, which he had absolutely no legitimate claim to at the time. And he wore it so convincingly that eventually the Nevada National Guard, and later the state of California, went ahead and made him an honorary colonel just to make the whole thing legal. That's the kind of nerve we're talking about. People laughed at him. The other pilots, the serious ones, the grease under the fingernails crowd, they rolled their eyes at the costume and the mustache and the showmanship, and Roscoe just kept smiling that big smile and cashing the checks, because the crowds loved him and the sponsors loved him, and the money followed the crowds. But a costume only gets you so far. You need a hook. Enter Gilmore in 1930. Roscoe struck a sponsorship deal with the Gilmore Oil Company out in California. Their logo, their whole brand, was a lion. The Gilmore Lion, red lion on the packaging, roaring away. And Roscoe, being Roscoe, didn't just paint a lion on the airplane, he got a real one. He acquired a lion cub, a few weeks old, and he named him Gilmore after the oil company. And that cub started flying with him, everywhere, coast to coast, air race to air race, publicity stop to publicity stop, Gilmore the Flying Lion. Now I know what you're thinking, because I thought it too. A lion in an open cockpit. What in the world? But understand, Roscoe took it seriously. He genuinely loved that animal. He had a custom parachute made for Gilmore, because the Department of Commerce, the aviation authority of the day, actually got involved and told Roscoe that any passenger in his airplane had to wear a parachute. And Gilmore legally was a passenger. So Roscoe had a little rig made, and there are photographs, real photographs, of this lion sitting up in the cockpit in his own parachute harness, looking for all the world like he belonged there. Picture that for a second. You're a kid in 1931 at some dusty airfield in Kansas. The air smells like castor oil and cut hay and hot metal, and down out of the sky comes this gleaming airplane, and out of it climbs a man in a blue uniform with a mustache like a movie villain, and then he lifts out a lion, a real lion. You would remember that day for the rest of your life. That was the whole point. Gilmore grew, of course. Lions do. He got up to be a big fella, a couple hundred pounds, and eventually the flying days had to end for the sake of everybody's fingers, but Roscoe never got rid of him. He kept Gilmore for the rest of the lion's life. Gilmore lived to be old, passed away in 1952, and Roscoe couldn't bear to part with him even then. He had him preserved, and that lion stayed with Roscoe until the day the man himself died. That tells you something. Underneath the showbiz, there was real affection there. It wasn't all an act. But here's what I want you to understand, and this is the part that gets lost. the mustache, the uniform, the lion, all of that would just be a circus act if Roscoe Turner couldn't fly. And brother, could he fly? Let me tell you about the Thompson Trophy. In the 1930s, there were two big prizes in American air racing. The Bendix Trophy was a cross-country dash, a flat-out point-to-point speed run across the country. And the Thompson Trophy, that was the big one for the crowds. The Thompson was closed-course pylon racing. You'd have these airplanes screaming around a course marked by pylons, low, right down in front of the grandstands, wingtip to wingtip, pulling hard turns around the pylons at speeds that would take the paint off. It was dangerous. It killed people. It was the most exciting thing going in American sport, and the national air races drew hundreds of thousands of spectators. Roscoe Turner won the Thompson Trophy three times, 1934, 1938, and 1939. Nobody else won it three times. He is the only man to do it. And he did it the hard way. Pylon racing rewards a certain kind of pilot. You've got to be willing to fly low, fly fast, and horse the airplane around those pylons, harder than good sense allows. All while some other fella is trying to do the exact same thing, 3 feet off your wing. It's flying with your teeth clenched. There's no room, no altitude to trade, no time to think. You react or you die. And Roscoe, the man everybody dismissed as a costume with a mustache, kept coming home first. Let me tell you about the airplane he finished with, because it's a legend in its own right. For those last two Thompson wins, Roscoe flew an airplane called the Turner RT-14 Meteor. Some folks called it the Laird Turner. It was built to his specifications, a big, powerful, low-wing racer wrapped around a monster of a radial engine, a Pratt & Whitney twin wasp cranking out something north of 1,000 horsepower. It was painted in his colors, and it was fast, and it was a handful. These racers were not forgiving airplanes. They were engines with just enough airframe bolted on to point them in a direction. Short wings for speed, which meant vicious stall characteristics and landing speeds that would make you sweat. You didn't fly them so much as you negotiated with them. Now here's where it gets interesting, and this is my favorite part of the whole story. 1937, Turner's flying the Thompson, going hard, and he cuts inside a pylon, cuts the corner. In pylon racing, you have to go around the outside of every pylon. Cut one, and you have to circle back and re-round it, or you're disqualified. Roscoe realized he'd cut it, and here's the thing, he was in the lead. He could have just kept going and hoped nobody noticed. Plenty would have. Instead, he turned around, went back, and re-rounded the pylon properly. Cost him the race. He came in fourth. And when they asked him about it afterward, he said he'd rather lose honest than win crooked. The showman, the self-promoter, the guy in the costume when it came down to it, flew it straight. That's the thing about Roscoe Turner that the mustache hides. There was a real pilot in there and a real code. He set speed records too. Transcontinental records. Back and forth across this country, chasing the clock at a time when just getting an airplane from one coast to the other reliably was an achievement. He flew for the movies, did stunt work in Hollywood, flew in a couple of pictures. He was, for a solid decade, the face of American speed flying. And then he did something that surprised everybody. He hung it up. After that third Thompson win in 1939, at the top of the game still winning, he retired from racing, walked away. He'd seen too many friends auger in air racing. In that era, chewed up pilots at a terrible rate, and Roscoe, for all his showmanship, was not a stupid man. He knew the odds catch everybody eventually, so he quit while he was ahead, which is a kind of wisdom a lot of pilots never manage. Back when Avgas was cheap and airspace was free, that decision took real guts too. Walking away from the thing that made you famous. He didn't leave aviation though, not by a long shot. He built something that outlasted the racing. He founded the Roscoe Turner Aeronautical Corporation out in Indianapolis, a flight school, a fixed base operation. He trained pilots. During the Second World War, that school of his trained thousands of young men to fly, poured them into the war effort. The showman became a teacher, an institution builder. The circus act turned into a legacy of pilots. And I think that's worth sitting with for a minute, because it would be easy to remember Roscoe Turner as a joke. The lion, the mustache, the fake colonel's rank, the powder blue uniform, easy to file him under novelty. But look at what the man actually did. Three Thompson trophies, a feat nobody has matched. Transcontinental speed records, a code of honor that cost him a race he could have stolen. And a flight school that sent thousands of aviators into the sky. The uniform was real in the end. The rank got made official. The showmanship was a tool, not a substitute. He understood something that I think we forget in this business. Aviation has always needed its characters. It's always needed the people who make the public look up. Because every kid who saw Roscoe Turner climb out of that airplane with a lion under his arm, some fraction of those kids grew up to be pilots and engineers and mechanics. He sold the dream so hard that people bought it and then went and lived it. They finally made him official on the military side too, later in life. Honorary rank, decorations, recognition from the Air Force he'd helped feed with trained pilots. The man who invented his own colonelcy out of thin air lived long enough to have the country pin the real thing on his chest. He passed away in 1970, and by then he'd become exactly what he'd always dressed up as, the genuine article. There's a lesson in Roscoe Turner for every one of us who flies. You can love the romance of this thing, the spectacle, the sheer joy of it, and still be dead serious about the craft. Those two things aren't enemies. The best pilots I've ever known were the ones who never lost the little kid delight of it, but who also flew every approach like it mattered, because it does. Roscoe had both, the grin and the discipline, the lion and the code. If you want to see his airplane, that RT-14 Meteor is preserved and hanging today at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. Go stand under it sometime. Look at those stubby little wings and that big brute of an engine, and try to imagine going around a pylon in that thing, 3 feet off another airplane at the red line with 100,000 people holding their breath. And then imagine the fella who flew it doing it in a powder blue uniform with a waxed mustache and a lion waiting back at the hangar. They don't make them like Roscoe Turner anymore. Maybe they never did. Maybe there was only ever the one. Most of what I've shared today comes from the records held by the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum and the histories of the National Air Races and the Thompson and Bendix trophies. If you want to dig deeper, there's a whole world of it waiting for you, and a little of it lives over at radiohanger.com. This is Taildragger. Keep your turns coordinated and your mustache waxed. I'll see you next time.